Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. FBTGyms.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Tell your body okay. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Episode 209 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly supported by FBT Gyms.
Yous all know at FBT are the best in the business, giving you so much more than your average gyms.
Join us in a supportive environment dedicated to helping you achieve your fitness goals, with locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and now Tallaght.
Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned athlete, FBT provides the resources, motivation and expertise to empower your fitness journey.
Unleash your potential at FBT Gyms for only €44 per month with no contract and full class access. Sign up now at fbtgyms.ie today.
Before we get started with this episode, we have some big, big news.
Huge news.
Talking Bollocks is going premium.
So now on top of your weekly main and bonus episodes, like you're about to enjoy now, we're giving you even more. More chaos and more content.
Become a member of TBX and you'll enjoy exclusive content, behind-the-scenes action, early access to episodes, live events and so much more.
We want to welcome you all around to The Gaff.
This is for you if you can't get enough of the podcast and want to be a VIB. Very important bollocks.
That's more chaos and more content. No ads. This is called TBX.
To be the first to find out more and what it's all about, sign up now. The link is in the podcast description and our bios on Instagram and TikTok. Right, let's kick on with the episode. Just to warn you, this episode contains pretty heavy topics, including child sexual abuse. But Mick and his team are doing amazing work, tracking down and catching people responsible for this material. But we wanted to give you a heads up, so take care while you're listening. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, COB.
And this week we're joined by...
Mick Moran.
Mick Moran.
What's M&M. The crack?
What's the crack?
How are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming in to us.
Yeah.
Might have been saying that, I like your old runners there.
Yeah.
Good pair of Columbia chats on your feet, what? I haven't seen a pair of them in years.
Nice boomer shoes.
Yeah. Come here, how are you keeping?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good, yeah. No bother on me. Yeah.
Are you busy?
Yeah. Very unlikely I'll be laid off. I'd be happy enough to be laid off, but it's very unlikely that I will.
Looking for a break, you are?
Yeah, well, you know.
Is that because the line of work that you're in, if you're laid off, it means things are going good then?
Yeah, well, like, I took up as the CEO of Hotline.ie last September after finishing with the Guards. So I was with the Guards like for 32 years, 33 years. And then this job came up, so I went for it and got it. And I'm delighted now to be there. Great little team, you know, great potential. And like, we do internet safety. That's all we do. That's all we're interested in doing. We're a not-for-profit outfit that takes reports from the public and then tries to get it taken down. We deal very closely, work very closely with the Guards and the Ministry for Justice and all that sort of thing. And we take complaints from members of the public. So you go to hotline.ie, you have a drop-down menu. You can make complaints about, not complaints. You're not making a complaint as such, but you're letting us know that there is some child sexual abuse material online. If you have a problem with intimate image abuse, which is also known as, well, CSAM, or child sexual abuse material, is known as child porn. Intimate image abuse is like revenge porn, you know, where you share your images with a boyfriend or whatever, and a week later he's not your boyfriend anymore and he's now using that to abuse you or, yeah, whatever. That also, with intimate image abuse comes sextortion, sexual extortion. That's a huge problem at the moment, really big problem. A lot of kids falling into that trap at the minute. We take sexual grooming. That's all in the kind of sexual area. We also take reports then of xenophobia, racism, terrorism, content that's online. We'll get it taken down. And then we take scams. So if you receive, you know, these texts you get saying, you know, click the link here to, you know, your parcel is delayed or whatever, we take them as well. And the whole idea of what we do is, like, we have a team of analysts and a great bunch of people, and you're going to hear me saying that all the time. They're really, really fabulous people. They will take your complaint. They will go and look at the website and they will then do a notice and take down to the hosting company letting them know that this is illegal in Ireland, please take it down. And if it's, say, child abuse material, if you get that in a WhatsApp message or you see a website that has pictures of children being abused, you know that the first thing you do with this is you report it to us and we'll get it taken down. So then the next person isn't getting it. It's the same with the scams.
Take us back to the start, Mick, because I want to understand how you ended up going down this route, because it's mental where you've been in your life. So
yeah.
Where are you from? What was life like growing up for you?
So I'm from Ashbourne in County Meath. My dad was a vet and we had a little bit of a farm going in Swords as well. So I'm Ashbourne, Swords, kind of South County Meath, North County Dublin. And went to school in Ashbourne and then secondary school in Vincent's. In those days, there was no secondary school in Ashbourne. Went to school in Vincent's there in Glasnevin. Did up till intercert there and then was asked not to come back. And for fortune.
I know someone like that.
You've had a similar path myself.
Well, I don't, yeah. But then I got sent to boarding school down the country, down in Ballyfin. It's now a luxury hotel, so... if most definitely wasn't a luxury hotel when I was in it. And you go to boarding school, it was funny. Like, I really loved it down there and got on really well. But then it opened my eyes in a lot of ways because, like, I'm from a very stable family. My father and mother got on well and there was never too much hassle. My father was a strict man. My mother was a strict woman. But they reared us well. There were six of us, you know. Six of us in the family, you know, three boys and three girls. My awful used to joke, oh, no, that's family planning for you. But we were reared well and kind of coming from that farming background type thing too, you learn a lot about life, you know. You learn a lot about adapting. You learn a great work ethic. You know, cattle are not going to wait to be fed. Bales of hay have to be brought in. You know, all of that stuff has to be done. And so you get a great work ethic. And I worked in hotels then for a while. I worked in a factory in Finglas for a while, driving a forklift, and then got into the hotel business and then went off to Paris. And I was working as a waiter over there for about a year and then came back and joined the Guards. And that's where I found my family. And I know, you know, people's like off the Guards and everything else, but I mean, what an experience, you know? And it was a real career. Like, I really had a great career. I cannot complain at all about the Guards. And I feel sorry in some respects for young fellas joining it now. It's a different job than it was when I joined it. I had a ball, you know. And like when I started first, I worked in Ballymun and I was working there as a uniform officer and then got into the drugs out there.
Not a lot of people.
Yeah. I remember this old fella one time, I was having a few pints in Inchy Car with a friend of mine's father and he didn't know I was a guard. And he says to me, so when are you doing yourself? And I says, I'm in the drugs, you know. Because I thought he knew he was a guard. And I says, I'm in drugs there, you know. And he goes, is there a lot of money in that?
So, yeah.
I got into the drug unit out there and then went from there. I worked on the Veronica Gearan murder investigation. Just found myself as the young lad, like, on that team out there in Lucan. That was nearly, you know, 18 months. But that changed everything then because from there, I ended up in the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation.
Mm.
Within the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation, there's all smaller teams, you know. Like there'll be the Stolen Car Squad or there'll be the Art and Antiques guys or there'll be this Serious Crime Investigators. And I ended up in what was known then as the DVSAIU, or the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Investigation Unit. So I ended up in there. And I wasn't in there long when kind of pressure came on to do something about what was going on online.
Mm.
And I had already, I'm just a curious kind of kid, was into computers already by then. You know, that's, say, late 90s. Computers and guards couldn't have been further apart. Mm. Like, it just wasn't been done, you know. It wasn't done. And, like, there was a couple of girls in there that used to put these forms. So guards would fill in form when they go on a domestic violence incident. And the forms would be sent in. And the girls were keeping them on the database. They had this thing where the two computers were sitting there and, like, it seems bizarre now, but in those days, they would come in and they would do, okay, this computer here is A to M and this computer here is M to Z. And one night I was doing nothing else and I connected the two computers together. So now the two computers are talking to each other and this was seen as an absolute miracle. Do you know what I mean? That someone could actually network computers. So anyway, then just started working online and I went from there, you know, and like, we didn't get law in Ireland until 98 around CSAM. So when I talk about CSAM, I'm talking about what people would know as child porn, child pornography. But our argument about child pornography is, like, pornography implies consent.
Yeah.
And the bottom line with the kids that are in these images and movies is they've never consented to anything.
Yeah.
Right? There's absolutely, child cannot, and it's very important to say that that we're not dealing with teenagers here. You're dealing with preteen children most of the time. These are kids pre-puberty, preteen. They're kids of 6 and 7. And it's a pure bell curve. Like, it's from 0. So you do see some toddler stuff. You do see infants being abused. And it's like from 0. And then it rises up to about 12 and then drops back down. So by the time, you know, a 17 and a half year old just doesn't, you like, first of all, you can't say when you look at an image whether it's a 17 and a half year old or not. But you know when it's a 9 year old.
Yeah.
So we don't call it child pornography. We call it CSAM, or child sexual abuse material. So that law didn't come in until 1998. But once the law came in, then we were ready to rock.
So what would happen prior to 98 if someone was caught with these images or whatever?
Nothing.
So it wasn't an offence?
Yeah, it wasn't an offence. The only offence it could have possibly been would have been what the Brits did. They went after it under indecency laws, which we had as well, but very weak. Be only a fine, or not even a fine. It would only be, you wouldn't have any powers to search a house, or you wouldn't have any. And we didn't really, like, at that time as well, we didn't really have, like, a lot of our computer crime stuff was very rudimentary. And so even finding the evidence and putting it before the court would have been hard. And it wasn't really until around 2001 when we did Operation Amethyst. You kids wouldn't remember that. Well, 2001, we did about 100 searches around the country in one day. And, like, that was mad stuff. It turned up some really strange people, and it kind of, the people who are into this, you know, we would call kind of sex offenders, they're essentially just people with a sexual interest in children. And so they're, for want of a better expression, they're wanking off to this material, and this is what gets them off. And, you know, once we got going, we started going really well. And, like, you have to realize that even in Europe, they weren't doing it. And even these days, you know, units can be up and down. They can have 4 or 5 people working this in a huge country, you know. And here in Ireland, even, you know, how many people are doing it, how many people are actually offending, and how many people are actually working in the guards doing it. And then the volume of it is massive, you know, yeah. Like, massive. You really get into this whack-a-mole thing with people. Do you know, people who possess or distribute CSAM, you get into this kind of whack-a-mole environment where there are so many of them out there. There are so many people who are possessing or distributing CSAM that, you know, if you lift a rock, I always use this analogy, if you lift a rock and you catch one, there's 99 other fuckers under the rock, and they all run under 99 other rocks. And then you go over and lift that rock and you catch one, and the other 99 all run to that rock. And then you lift that rock and you catch one, and then 99 goes and runs to another rock. And so that's an impossible thing. So really the most important part of it now, and what we've come to realize now, is the kids themselves, right? So we're less interested in, now it's not that we're not interested in the criminal, but here's a sad fact about child abuse. Child abuse, like 85 to 90% of child abuse takes place within the family home or the immediate family circle. So if you can find the child, you find the offender. Mm. Right? So focusing on the victim is a better way of dealing with it, because also child sexual abuse is a long-term thing. It doesn't just, it's very rare that you'll only have a guy abusing a child once. It's very rare. The abuse is generally going on over a period of time. And if you read about cases in court and everything else, you'll see that, you know, Uncle Jimmy was abusing little Johnny from the age of 8 to the age of 15, you know? So if the uncle is recording that, right? So he's taking pictures or movies of the abuse, and those images are being shared online. Actually, we get an opportunity to take little Johnny out of that.
So do you, I know it's probably fairly obvious answer to the question, but, like, you have to sit down and analyse all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I did it for many years. I don't have to now, but I did, yeah. But that's what my team does now, yeah. That's what Gardaí do, police all over the world do, this victim identification. Yeah, so you have to sit down in front of this series and you have to look at it for and examine it for clues that might indicate what country it's from. Then when you find out what country it's from, you make sure that the police there are aware of it. And then they will carry out further inquiries. So you'll often get cases. Like, the one thing about a lot of these series is it's not just the abuse. Mm. You'll also see pictures of the child, say, brushing their teeth, putting on their school bag, going to school. And all of that gives you an opportunity to pick out something that might give it a country. Reg plate. Or sometimes you can just, like when you're analysing a series, sometimes you can just see, like especially the beauty of the international nature of it is that you can look at a series and sometimes say that's Irish. There's no explanation as to why you know that. You just know. Do you know, of one particular series in mind where the kids were playing on a trampoline and they were absolutely done star stress kids, do you know? And it was just as obvious as the nose on your face that they were Irish kids. Why? It was just hard to say why. They just were. Do you know, they were definitely either Irish or English, do you know? So you get that kind of feeling about them. Then sometimes you can watch kids growing up. You know, these are cute people who are doing it, the real criminals, so they'll remove anything in the pictures that are indicative. And so sometimes you can watch a child growing up. So you see a new series will come out this week. There'll be a new series of abuse. And so you can watch a child from 6 to 12 or 14 before either the abuse stops or the sharing of the images stop.
What do you mean by a series, Mick?
So a series is something that has a commonality. So it's taken by the same victim or the same abuser or the same camera has been used to take the same pictures. And so the way we sort them is we sort them into series. Victim identification people sort them into series. And there's an international database in Lyon, in France, in Interpol. That's where I worked for a few years. And all of the material that is being seized in different countries feeds into that database. And then it's sorted into series. Like, the sex offenders share this stuff online. We're taking it down as best we can. But then, generally speaking, you know, there's no getting it removed when it's on the dark net. Because you can't identify. Don't know where it is being stored. But you can still do victim identification on that.
Yeah.
You can still identify a victim through that way, you know. And so series can be just one photo of somebody or some one video. Or it can be a professionally produced video of sex with a child.
And then, I know Calvin just touched on it a minute ago, but you obviously have a team now and you just have to go over these pictures and videos.
Yeah.
And just look for clues in them.
Yeah, yeah. In the Garda Computer Crime Unit, there's a team of guys who do victim identification. Team of people. And the Garda National Protective Services Bureau, they do victim identification as well. So they're going through stuff that they're seizing, stuff that they're being sent. They're going through it every day. And my team, we identify the CSAM, and then it goes into an international server that all the other hotlines are working on. And from there, police teams all over the world are working on identifying who the kids are. We want to take hotline to that. So we're working with the Department of Justice now to get the permission to assist with the victim identification. But in the future, we would like to be actually scanning and being out there. And it's logical to me that we should be out there, you know, because the more you find it, the more you can get it taken down, the more you can take it down, the more you're protecting the kids. One of the aspects, and if you're being genuinely victim-centric, one of the aspects to always remember is that, like, if you've been sexually abused as a child, that in itself is very, very tough, right? It's really bad to be sexually abused as a child for hundreds of different reasons. And people who have been sexually abused as kids often end up in the statistics around addiction, you know, between drink and drugs and whatever. They're very high up in the lists of people who commit suicide. So it really is a traumatic event in your life when you should be absolutely protected. And that's something that society is getting much, much better at, right? We're not there yet, but really the idea of protecting kids and keeping kids safe from people who want to exploit them, because that's ultimately what sexual abuse is. It's exploitation. Kids being exploited by people who have a sexual interest in them. The long-term goal for society is to ensure that that doesn't happen anymore, right? So all this online stuff is just where it becomes visible. Where it's invisible is actually where it's happening.
Yeah.
So If you have been sexually abused as a child, that's one level of trauma. A second level of trauma is the knowledge that when you're walking down the street, you could be passing someone out in Grafton Street. You could be passing somebody that's wanked off to your pictures last night forever. They're out there, and they're out there forever. And that's a secondary level of trauma, a secondary victimization of the child. Every time that picture is up online, every time it's viewed, it's a secondary victimization of the child. So if you're genuinely victim-centric, then one of the key things to do when you're coming across this stuff is get it taken down. And that's what Hotline does. And we create this environment here in Ireland, this kind of hostile environment to any of that type of offending, do you know? And
Mick,
sorry, lads. This is my daily life, so I'm, you know,
it's just easy. For
I am
you,
sorry.
You,
well, I, well, it's not easy, but it's, I'm used to it, And it's important that I don't desensitize
the severity of it,
right? Yeah. Because it is like that's what we're looking at, that's what you're dealing with, and society, as I said, has this abhorrence to it's just ethically, morally, legally, it's just wrong to abuse a child. And then it's a further wrong to photograph or to video that and to share that with your buddies on the darknet. That's another further aggravation of what is already a load of shite.
Yeah. Mick, you said a few minutes ago, now forgive me if I sound stupid and I'm just not clued in here, but you said a couple of minutes ago that there's a team there to investigate pictures or videos to establish whether it's CSAM. Would it not be obvious whether something is CSAM? Or what could determine that it's not or it is? Where are the line?
Okay, so there's another thing called CSEM, right? Which is child sexual exploitation material. So where we say CSAM, CSEM, that's our business talk. To say that it's clear that there is sexual exploitation in the image, right? So the image is here. It's clear that there's sexual exploitation taking place. However, it does not meet the legal standard of abuse. So if you look at the definition of child abuse material or child pornography under the Child Trafficking and Pornography Act, there has to be, it has to be a child, obviously. There has to be an abusive act taking place. So there has to be a sexual act taking place on the child, or there has to be a concentration on the anal or genital region of the child in the picture before it meets the legal definition of child sexual abuse material. If, on the other hand, that's absent, so these pictures you see of what is clearly an 8-year-old child dressed in suspenders and stockings and holding a dildo, that's child sexual exploitation material because it doesn't meet the threshold of abuse.
Yeah. Is this just a technicality to categorise it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Is it a bit like saying, now I know this might be completely, like, correct me if I'm wrong, is this like saying there's someone up in court for killing somebody and you say, right, was it murder or manslaughter?
Correct. Right. That's exactly right. And the thing is that whether it's CSAM or CSAM, the legality of it then unlocks other things.
Yeah.
So you can have a child, like, and we often find pictures of kids in sexual poses and stuff like that, right? That's exploitation material, but it doesn't meet the standard for abuse material. Yeah. And if it doesn't meet the standard, then you can't go raiding houses. Yeah. You can't go, right? Now, that's actually very understandable. And it's funny because even only last night, I was looking at pictures my wife put up on the family WhatsApp group of her that she was in her mother's, and she took photos of the photos in the mother's thing. And there's a picture there of her in the bath, just naked in the bath. That is not CSAM, and it's absolutely not CSAM, right? There isn't zero problem with nudity. Zero problem. It's not abusive. It's not, there's no sexual angle to it. No, there's no exploitation. There's no, yeah, there's nothing desirable about it. Now, an offender might look at that and be sexually excited by it, but it is an absolute innocent picture. So you have to make this distinction. Like, if there was a child here standing in front of us naked, that is not CSAM and it's not CSEM. That's the context then around it might make it CSAM. Like, if there's a picture, if I'm on my phone and I see a picture of a naked child and I'm on www.naturist.com, that's not sexual. That's just a picture of a naturist child, a family of naturists. On the other hand, if I'm in a chat group called fuckyourdaughter.com, now the context is exploitative And that's what makes that picture. So yes, it is. It's a technical difference, but it's a technical difference that's there to protect us to go about our normal lives and not to be accused just because there's a picture of your child in the bath. That's not illegal. It's absolutely not illegal.
But see, you're saying, like, if it sees Sam, you can go raiding houses.
Yeah.
But you can't if it sees him. Or what's the law there?
Well, the law there is that you can get a warrant. You can get a warrant. So if you have a reasonable suspicion, and you see, that's often the case. So it would be untrue to say you couldn't get a warrant for CSEM. It would be untrue because all you have to do is convince a judge that we have a reasonable suspicion that we will find CSEM in that house. Then you'll get a warrant. But where it becomes, and now where I'm in hotline now, you now have to convince a hosting company that that website that's up there and has nothing but CSEM on it, you have to now convince that hosting company to take it down, even though it's not illegal.
Yeah.
And they will give you the old freedom of speech stuff.
Yeah.
And liberty and
privacy. It's all technicalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's one of the frustrations that our people have in Hotline is that companies don't have to take it down. Most of them will, in fairness. And if they're a reasonable hosting company, they'll absolutely take it down. Because it breaches their terms and services, you know, nudity, whatever, their own terms and services, it'll breach that. So they will, most companies, they'll take it down, but some companies won't. They won't take it down. Another example of that is cartoons, right? So cartoon of Bart Simpson having sex with his mother, right? Which there are a lot of that stuff going on out there. They are technically CSAM here in Ireland, but they may not be CSAM in the States.
Mm.
And if it's been hosted in the States, all you can do is ask the hosting company to take it down and the hosting company will say no. Or I saw a cartoon recently. It was on Twitter, now called X. And it was of a clear child cartoon, right? And the child was being raped by someone. And the idea behind the cartoon was that this is all Muslims do, right? So it was a kind of a clearly a white girl under 10, say, right? Cartoon. Now, I'm saying it's a cartoon, right? And there's a Muslim man raping her. And that is a combination of two things. Here in Ireland, it's CSAM, but it's also hate. You see? It's also hate crime. But Twitter won't take that down because it's all, they believe in freedom of speech.
But I can't see with these hosting companies, why would they not? Like, how do they benefit from that? Is that just like interactions?
Someone
or
paying them to host that?
Yes.
So they're paid to host that.
Yeah, but you see, they also, libertarians would believe that there should be absolutely, under no circumstances, anything
that's censored.
Illegal.
Yeah.
So content should never be illegal.
Yeah.
No content. That's a libertarian ideology that's out there. Like, there are people who genuinely believe that CSAM, because it exists, there should be freedom of expression and it should be shared and it should be allowed out there. That the government has no right to tell you what you can and cannot look at. And back in, like, in 1984, like, I often tell this story about a girl called Tia Pumbik from the Netherlands. She was a porn actress who died of a cocaine overdose in the Holiday Inn in Eindhoven in 1984. She was 6, right? And that's in the old days, right? Like, when you go back in those old days, pornography itself was illegal for, like, up until the 60s. And there's a great thing I love to show, which is it's a Time magazine cover. And they're basically talking about pornography. Denmark was the first country ever to make pornography legal. It's not even legal, they just stopped regulating it. And on the coattails of that libertarian movement for pornography, or government won't tell us what we can look at, and on the coattails of that came in the child pornography, or pornography involving children. And it took a while, and even in 1984, when you look back and you read about it, like, they brought in law in the Netherlands in 1984 to make child pornography illegal. But it was tight. It was a tight vote, because this freedom of expression idea, this libertarian idea that nothing should be illegal, and people shouldn't be told what they can and cannot do. You mentioned censorship. Like, we have no notion of that here in this country, do you know? Because we did have a regime here that would ban James Joyce because there was a mention of fucking petticoats in it, do you know?
Mm.
And we had that regime. That was the Irish thing. And that's why we were probably so far behind. We didn't have the same indecency laws that they had in England because really it didn't exist here in Ireland. Do you know? Mm. But now we have the internet. That cat's long gone out of the bag.
All bets are off, yeah.
All bets are off. All bets are off. So it's really good to have good, strong law now that'll deal with this properly. Mm-hmm. But again, you see, that's looking at it from a libertarian perspective or a Puritan perspective. And like I heard an expression recently, like there's nothing wrong necessarily with pornography.
Mm.
But you can look at pornography from a feminist perspective and you can say, well, that girl is being exploited in that. Like, yes, she's an adult. Yes, she's consenting. But who can imagine as a woman that they would end up as a porn star? Do you know? And now with OnlyFans, and the same thing is happening now with OnlyFans. And I heard an expression recently that said, look, you can be sex positive, but porn critical, right? And pornography, really, in those years of the 60s, like it just didn't exist prior to that, or it existed in a kind of backstreet kind of way. But then, like, Color Climax were a company in Denmark. They started to produce these really good quality porn mags, basically.
Mm.
Right? And as young fellas, we would have all been mad into porn mags. I mean, going on the school tours to the Isle of Man or whatever, like getting a porn mag was a massive stroke in the 80s, do you know? And that would get passed around. What harm in that? No harm in that. The harm comes where you actually start to, you know, the deeper harms. Like there was very high quality magazines being published that contained images of child abuse, what we call it now, but in those days they called it child porn. But in the old days, in order to get one of those magazines, you would have to travel to Amsterdam or to New York or to, right? And in London, it wouldn't have been even available because it would have been absolutely under-the-counter stuff. But you could get it. And once you got it once, you could get it again because you get it posted over or you whatever, right? But then along comes the internet. And the first stuff that we used to see on the internet back in the mid-90s were scans of those magazines. That was the first stuff we used to see.
Mm.
And when it was made legal in 98, that's the sort of stuff you were getting, you were seizing. But now, and since then, it's just gone up and up and up and up and up. And now the stuff you're seeing is freshly made stuff that's been made on phones now, right? And like, it's a perfect storm because between the quality of the cameras now on your smartphone to how cheap it is to store it. You can store it in the cloud. You can keep it on your hard drive. You know, the speed and ease with which it can be exchanged. It's a perfect storm.
Can we go back to when you were a guard? So you're talking about the legislation comes in. He's had a big operation in 01. What's the activity like for CSAM in Ireland at that stage? Is it rampant? Are you raiding houses on the regular? Are you catching culprits on the regular?
Yeah. We were starting to see what happened was a law got passed in the States that kind of said any of these big companies. Now, this was pre-Facebook and all that. This was back in the Yahoo days. So I don't know, like, you know, Netscape. But what happened over there was these companies were all told, if you find CSAM on your systems, you report it to this central repository for this called NCMEC. And then so companies were obliged by law to report that, right? And so once they were reporting it, it will be identified who uploaded it, and then that would get sent to that country. So we were starting to see that more and more. We were finding our own stuff as well. Like we would be on the chat rooms chatting to these fellas, and you know, if they sent us stuff, like we had a couple of very good cases like that where guys would share. Now this was kind of pre-web days even. This is in internet services like IRC that you guys probably have never even heard of. It's internet relay chat. Like there'd be rooms on there called dad and daughter sex, or there'd be rooms on there and there'd be chat rooms and people would be in there and you'd be able to see who they are and not necessarily who they are personally, but you'd be able to know that they're in Ireland or whatever. And so we went after a few that way. So we had some great successes in those days. But really and truly, the idea that someone would upload something to the internet and all that just started to hit. The more the internet hit, the more then jobs we started getting. And it's just been on the up and up ever since, you know.
And with that then, is it down to how successful you are at catching this? Does the Interpol opportunity come up then? Or?
Yeah, no. For me personally, it was kind of like I was very active in that area. And so I was going out to training courses in Europe and whatever. And then I became a trainer on those training courses and then got a bit of name for myself in this area. And like ultimately, like at its base level, I'm just a cyber cop. Like I just understand how the internet works. I understood networking. I understood forensic computing. I got into that in a big way. And then the opportunity came up in Interpol. So the Interpol is basically a club.
Yeah.
Right. And so guards get loan. You go on loan. Like you don't get transferred. You go on loan for a couple of years out there. And that's what I did. So I got sent by Ireland out to work in Interpol because of the skills and the knowledge that I had in this area, you know, because they were running the International Child Sexual Exploitation Database. One guy, a Swedish guy, Anders Pearson, he was running this database all on his tod, you know. So when I arrived out there, I was only one of three that were working there by the time I arrived. And it took it on there now. Like, actually, mostly down to a guy called John Climax, who's a philanthropist here in Ireland. He pays a lot of money to Interpol to run this area, you know. And so now there's 20, 30 people working there. And they are the central repository globally for CSAM. All the police around the world who are doing victim identification are feeding into that database. Mm. And that way, that's why when I talk about a series, you asked me earlier on about a series. When you're storing those series, you get to see them. Like, you could have 100 pictures in a series and it's the 101st picture that breaks the case.
Yeah, so you have to go through them all.
You have to go through them all, but more importantly, you have to keep them all and you have to keep adding to them. So as you're seeing them, as they're being seized in different places,
yeah,
you're getting them in a chat room, or they're being seized in a house in Donnybrook. Like, they're fed into the system and then they're logged and tagged and they go in with the same series. So a picture in Canada coming from the Canadians could be the one that breaks a case.
Yeah. Just a little more. Try out in the ground. Tell your body your head. Walk it hard and long. When you finish that. Come down. Come down. Come down. Come up. Come up. So you talked about there that you're in chat rooms. These are obviously undercover pretending to be somebody, blah, blah, blah. They get sent material from that. You might raid a house.
Exactly.
Let's say you raid John Smith's house in Donnybrook, as you're saying there. You find a hard drive with material on it. He may necessarily not be the abuser in that case.
Yeah. No,
but the material he possesses then could probably crack a case in France.
Exactly.
Okay. And
the other thing that's important to remember is that these people who, and I use that crude expression, are wanking off to this material, they are showing a sexual interest in children. So when you raid John Smith's house in Donnybrook, one of the key factors that any guard has in mind going in his door is, what access does this guy have to kids himself?
Okay.
Is he a father? Is he a school teacher? Is he a guard? Is he a priest? You know, does he work in child psychiatry? Does he work in, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. What access has he got to children? Because there's four preconditions that have to be in existence. And I know I'm getting a bit academic here now, right? But there's four preconditions that have to exist before a child can be abused. Two of them are for the offender themselves and two of them for the child. The first two is, one, you have to want to have sex with children. You can't have sex with a child unless you want to have sex with the child. Two, you have to get over your own conscience. You know it's wrong. You know you could get in serious trouble. You have to get over that yourself. And then next two are relating to the child itself. Three, which is, it seems obvious, but you need unfettered access to the child. You need to be able to be in the room alone with the child. You can't abuse a child in the middle of Grafton Street. You wouldn't be long getting thrown in jail. And the fourth then is to get over the resistance of the child. So child doesn't want to have sex with you. So you have to get over that resistance. So those four preconditions have to be in place. So that number three is the big one, access to the child. Mm. And that's why people who are preferential sex offenders, people who want to have sex with children, they will go deliberately and look for a job where they have access to children, or they'll become a parent in order to abuse children. They're preferential paedophiles. And it's very important to remember as well, like Jeffrey Epstein, for example, he wasn't a pedo.
Yeah.
No, don't be showing me dirty looks now, right?
He was me there.
No,
yeah.
Okay, so a pedophile is someone who has a sexual interest in prepubescent children, right? In the DSM, right, which is the book that psychologists use, someone who has pedophilia or has pedophilic tendencies will be distressed, if you like, by that, okay? And so that's how psychologists or therapists would deal with somebody who has a sexual attraction to children. They break down then into preferential or situational offenders. So a preferential offender is someone who, just their only way they're getting their jollies is with a prepubescent child. Situational then is where it could be criminal or whatever, but it's just that they find themselves, it's not necessarily that they want to have sex with a child, they just end up having sex with a child. Right now, they have to want it, but it is a situational situation. So it just happens, right? There, that generally tends to be criminal, people with criminal minds who will abuse a child just because they can, right? And there's a lot of stuff like that. That will be linked more or less with rape and control of the sexuality of the child. Whereas the preferential, he's a different kettle of fish. The preferential paedophile, he is somebody who actually has a desire to have sex with children. And he don't get off any other way.
So you're saying Epstein was the first one?
No, I'm saying Epstein was actually an ebophile, right? So the youngest victim of Epstein was probably 14, 15. Right. He had a thing about teenage girls.
Okay.
Right? So that doesn't, he is absolutely not a paedophile.
So in my mind, it was under 17. That's the same. Like, to me, under 17, that's, you're a paedophile.
I would have thought that as well.
Yes. Yeah. So, but of course, I could say the same thing, right? But that has implications as a professional working in this area.
Yes. Yeah. I don't like the technicalities all
right.
the stuff.
So, and I'm not going to give you technicalities. Yeah. And I'm not insisting people
be sympathetic.
Don't call Epstein. Yeah, I'm just saying that there is a nuance there that has to be acknowledged. And I'm absolutely not speaking up for sex offenders in any way, shape or form. I'm just telling you from our perspective, you have to be.
You're giving us the black and white. This is how your job is done.
This is it, right?
This is why probably when something happens and people are like, oh, why didn't they do that? Because they couldn't, because of the law in that situation.
Or because, like, doesn't mean what Epstein did was right. It absolutely doesn't. I'm just saying he's not a pedo.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
It's not that word pedophile.
Exactly.
Definition of pedophile.
Exactly. And where definitions matter and where words matter is especially in treatment. When court of law, and especially then in treatment, in dealing with people. If you're dealing with the likes of Epstein, and it's not, there's no hierarchy of victimology here, right? There's no hierarchy. There's no, like, if it's sexual abuse, it's sexual abuse.
Yeah.
But if a girl is 9, she cannot consent. That's the end of it, right? You are now breaking the law. If you are involved sexually with a 9-year-old, and of course these people will sit across the room for you and tell you that she came on to me, they'll make all sorts of justifications and everything else in their minds. But thankfully the law, and morally and ethically and society, just says no.
Yeah.
Mm. Whereas it gets a little bit more complicated if a girl is 16 and a half or whatever and she wants to have sex with another person. The law is clear around the age of sexual consent, and that law, you know, like, a person can consent sexually at a certain age. That's the point. And it's when they're approaching that age that it becomes complicated or difficult. Mm. But the law tries its best to deal with that. I mean, there's age differentials now, where before, if you had sex with a girl that was 16 and a half, you were in big trouble. But now if you're 16 and a half or you're 17 and a half, so you had this situation years ago, you had these situations called statutory rape, where if you had sex with a 16 and a half year old, you were guilty of statutory rape, even though you were also 16 and a half.
Mm.
You with me?
Yeah.
And that's a difficult one. That's a difficult one. You know, those were difficult cases. And girls, and of course it was boys and girls, and because girls were left carrying the can if they got pregnant or whatever, then they got the protection of the courts. But now if you're 16 and a half, she's 16 and a half, and that's fine. Do you know what I mean? It's grand.
Yeah, no. I'm just thinking in my head here, I'm just thinking as a man, you should know whether someone's fucking, you'll know generally speaking when someone's under 20, let alone whether they're 17 or 16 and a half. So I think you should know better. And if you think somebody looks 17, 18, you should be going, well, I need to see some sort of, like, seriously, like, come on, as a man, you know, like, there's a rare case when there's a young one 17 and she looks in her 20s, but you should know when someone's 16, 17 years of age.
Yes. And
different though, I think if you're, like you're saying, the boy is 17, the girl 16 and a half.
That's where you're tricky. If you're 30, she's 16 and a half, you deserve everything you get.
And is that different than the law?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. And that's the point I'm making. It's absolutely, if you're, like, the big concentration now is on the word exploitation.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're exploiting somebody, and that also comes into consent, right? It has to be informed consent. So if you're having sexual relations with someone, there has to be informed consent. So that's why nowadays, if you're the boss, you shouldn't be having sex with the girls in the office.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a natural
The balance of power there as well.
Balance of power. Thank you. Right? And therefore, it's exploitation.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And that's just not going to be, you know, hashtag me too and whatever, you know, that's just not going to be tolerated these days. And it shouldn't be. And it's proper order that it isn't. And so all the education going on in the country and everything else around consent now is very good. It's very positive. But one of the key given facts is that children cannot consent.
Mm.
And you, as a responsible adult, you should absolutely know that.
Yeah, and enforce it.
And you should absolutely stay away from it. Unfortunately, people are driven by different things.
Yeah.
And so sexual abuse still takes place.
Mick, I just wanted to ask you, because I want to kind of stay on this topic here, on this trajectory that we're going, because I have loads more questions to ask. But I just want to ask you personally, over the years and all the investigations into the CSAM, did you ever struggle with it? Or did you ever get too emotional with it?
No, I never got emotional with it. And I think there's where I was saying about being a farming background and stuff like that. Like, you, in a farming background, like, you're dealing with slaughterhouses and you're dealing with animals and you're, you know, so you kind of grow up in that world where, you know, you come home in the evening covered in cow shite or whatever. Like, you just get used to it, right? Then when you're a guard and you're dealing with stuff like fatal traffic accidents, suicides, you know, my first ever call was a girl throwing herself off the towers. That was my first ever call as a guard. Do you know what I mean? So you just get into it in that sense. So CSAM, you know, the greatest power with computers and everything else, and it's so important that kids understand that, is that you can switch it off. That's the great thing about computers. You can switch it off. Your phone, you can switch it off. Imagine that. You can disconnect from the internet. Imagine that. And so with CSAM, it is like that. You do what you can, and then you switch it off and you go home. And I had my own kids, and they were the same age as these kids that I was looking at all day, every day. It didn't bother me in a lot of ways. I was very lucky because I had that at home, and I had to get home and I had to deal with their thing. And I'm just very happy to have that steady home life and stuff like that. And also, a lot of the stress around this, and that's what it actually is the stress, is vicarious stress. You're taking on the stress for this child. And believe it or not, if you're not able to do anything, if you have this kind of helplessness that's inherent in that, right, that you're looking at pictures of a child being abused and you can't do anything, that can be frustrating. That can lead to stress rise and everything else. But can you imagine the day that you send pictures to Canada or to France because you reckon that this is a French child and you send it to France, and then they ring you back 3 days later and they say, we found her, or him. Can you imagine how good that feels? And you find out that the child's name is, and you find out that the child is that age, and if you find out that the offender was the father or the uncle or whatever, and you find out that the abuse has been going on for 5 years, and you by your efforts, have stopped that. You, by your efforts, have got that child the help they need. Gee, there's no better feeling than that. That's a win.
Yeah,
that's a win.
Of course, yeah.
Right? So, yeah, of course, initially it's quite shocking when you see it first and you start to deal with it first. But then once you're minding yourself and you're looking after yourself and you're kind of you're conscious of the fact that there is what you can do, and then there's that button there. If you push the button there.
I think you're kind of oversimplifying the saying, because switch off, but at the end of the day, you're trying to identify that victim.
Yeah.
How do you not take it home with you, especially when you have kids? Is there a support network there for you?
Oh, yeah. So then my staff now in Hotline, they see a wonderful psychologist who monitors them and keeps them on the straight and narrow. They have their own ways of dealing with their own stress. So they, like, one of the bigger costs in the Hotline is the kind of welfare days, and they look after themselves. So it's kind of like a pyramid thing. I won't get over scientific about it, but basically they support each other primarily. They look after their teammates. They take plenty of breaks. They have welfare days every quarter. They go off and do something instead of sitting in front of the computer. They go off and they do escape rooms or whatever. Like, I'm threatening to bring them sailing on Dublin Bay, and they're like, oh, no way. There's one girl in particular who apparently has this projectile vomit that works really when she gets out on the water. So I can't wait to get them out. But so they do their welfare days and stuff like that. But primarily they look after themselves. I think one of the main things that people don't realise as well is that, like, one of the keys to looking after yourself is having a good boss and having. So I try to create this environment in the workplace that they are happy. They have everything they need to do the job. And they understand that if it's getting too much, they can switch it off. And they have the psychotherapist that looks after them. And they can go and see her whenever they want. And then, yes, that has a cost to the organization. But that's what money well spent.
Necessary cost.
Money well spent.
Yeah.
Do you know, all that welfare stuff.
Yeah. In Hotline in last year, 2024, you've had 29,000 cases. And then in 2022, you've had around 13,000 cases. So it's over doubled. But then from 2020 to 2024, it increased 10 times.
Yeah, but like, here's the nature of this game. If you gave me 100 people, I'll double, treble, quadruple those figures.
Okay, so it's the resources.
It's a resources thing.
Okay.
It's out there. And it's a question of how many people you're thrown at.
Until I don't know if that's more encouraging or disheartening. The fact that, like, you see the rise in the case, you're like, fuck, it's getting worse. But then you're like, no, we just haven't uncovered, we can't cover that much ground.
I told you earlier on, I used that analogy about the fellas under the rocks. It's out there, and there's any amount of it out there. And yes, you can allow it to get discouraged, but the reality is, if you, like, isn't it ironic that something, the fact that it's out there allows us to do something about it. Think about the nature of sexual abuse. It takes place in the dark. We're there, we can shine a light on it. And the fact that it's coming up online means that we can actually do something about it. Whereas before, it was happening in industrial schools, it was happening in schools, and it was going on for years, and no one done nothing about it.
Yeah.
Vincent's had it. Recently, Blackrock College had it.
My own
school. All the big schools. Your own school. Where were you? Where did you go to school?
Joey's in Fairview.
Yeah. Oh,
it was like, it was with one of those legacy cases, you know, when they went through it.
Same in Vincent's. Same in Belvedere. Same. So that was going on for years and years and years and years, and no one knew anything about it. Imagine nowadays, if that was going on in a school and the pictures get released onto the internet, you wouldn't be long identifying a child from a school crest
badge,
on a uniform. Or a school bag, or a school building in the background, you wouldn't be long picking it up.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
So that's ironic, but it's also a good thing that we're able to do this and that the system exists. And that's what we do, and that's what the Once team does in the Guards. That's what they do. They will identify cases all the time of Irish kids being abused, and they're able to get them the help that they need.
Is it frustrating to you when you see people caught with CSAM? Like, I've seen it so much over the last few years of people getting caught with thousands of images of children, and they go into court and they come out with a suspended sentence.
It's not frustrating to me, but I would say it's not frustrating to me, but I think the courts in Ireland actually do it a little bit wrong, right?
I'd say more than a little bit, right? Nick, but yeah.
I think that sentences shouldn't be given on the number of pictures that people have.
Right. One is too many, is that where you're going?
Correct.
Yeah, I agree.
Where's the hierarchy?
Yeah.
Right? I think people should be getting sentences based on how involved they are. Because the nature of images and movies and this material, CSAM, is that you can very quickly build up a collection of hundreds and thousands of images. So when I see fellas, people going to court for possession of 200 images or 200,000 images, I don't care. I really don't care. What I want to know is where they fit
in the hierarchy.
In the hierarchy.
How do you prove that, though?
But the guards can prove that. You can show that. The guards can just, it's a way of just changing the what you're presenting to the court. So sure, they have 200 or 200,000 class A images or grade one or grade two, whatever images. That's fine. But if I was a judge, I'm not a judge, thankfully, I would want to know two things. Where did these images come from? Who is that child? Was a victim identification analysis done on this material? Who were the kids? Have they been identified? If they have, where are they from? What's their names? Right? That's one question I'll be asking. The second question I'll be asking is, how involved was this guy in the ecosystem that feeds off this? Was he in chat rooms? Was he an administrator of a chat room? Was he on the dark net? Does he have encryption on his machine? Is the stuff all just dumped into one folder? Or has he organised his little library from, these are 7 to 12-year-old females, these are 4-year-old boys, these are, right? Has he organised his folder structure? How deep into this shit is he? That's what I'd be sentencing on.
So you're moving it away from the severity of the image.
Correct.
To the nature of
the
person.
Because there is no such thing as severity
yeah.
of image.
Yeah.
Right? There's no such thing as severity of image.
Yeah.
Right? To say that they're class one or class two is wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, you seen a case recently and they had a category. Someone got caught with 16 images. 12 of them were class one.
Yeah.
And that was considered in the yeah. sentencing.
Yeah.
Because some of them weren't, but some of them were. That's what, and you're like, he fucking has 16 child abuse images on his fucking
right.
wherever hard drive.
Right. And that, and you see, unfortunately, the courts, I think, and then, you know, it's down to training judges and stuff like that. You can train the judges and they can understand this a little bit better. If they're not understanding it, it's probably because they're not being told it. And that's where the guards, I'd say, are falling down. If you have a guy who is just collecting this stuff and tossing off to it, is he as bad as someone who's actually abusing a child?
Yeah.
Is there any hope for him?
No. This is a conversation I actually had with Calvin. When you agreed to come in to us, I think if you have any inkling that you are interested in children, I don't believe you can be rehabilitated. I think there's talk around, should there be damage control? So somewhere for these people to go to understand or to not ever act on their urges. But even that for me is like, I don't know what the next step for me, if I was able to put a rule in place for people who have an urge to be with children or to want to see children, naked pictures or anything like that, I don't know what the next step would be in the law for me. But for me, right now, if you're caught with CSAM, Mick, I know you're only meeting me for the first time, so you're probably like, this young fella probably says this about everything, but I believe you can be rehabilitated from anything, from most things in life. And that goes from murder to whatever else. But when it comes to children, I just think I find it difficult to find a way to be like, let's reason with them, let's give them a safe space.
And that is one of the major problems.
And you mean that from my point of view?
You see, it's not even your point of view that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about newspaper headlines. You know, lock them up, cut their balls off, put them out in Inish Turk and let them live on whatever they can grow. That's not the answer either, right? Because ultimately, sex offenders are people in your neighbourhood. And if you can rehabilitate a fellow who goes out stealing every day, you can rehabilitate a sex offender. Now, I am finding myself now sitting here, right? And it's going to sound like I'm supporting sex offenders. I'm not. I think they're the most abhorrent. You know, in Australia, they say rock spiders. You can't get less. You can't get lower in the pecking order than a sex offender. But you also cannot punish people for what they're thinking. If I could punish you for what you're thinking, if I could see inside your head, I bet you it's the fucking scariest place.
Very scary.
Yes.
There's no kids there.
No. Fair enough. Fair enough.
And that's
fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough.
And I think, but that's what
when
I'm saying.
When I see these fellas getting suspended sentences, the initial question was, am I frustrated? No, I'm not. Because I know, right? First of all, it's a suspended sentence. Second of all, now we know who they are. And more importantly, they know who they are. Fourthly, have they got access to kids? Yes. Different set of rules now applies to them. They can't work with kids anymore. They can't be a school teacher. They can't be a priest. They just can't have access to kids. And more importantly, most importantly of all, they now have exposure to help. And to write any human being off is not something that I would say is a good thing for society to do.
I agree.
Okay.
Until
it comes to kids, right? But if you have a sexual attraction to kids, that it's the two ways, is attraction and action. If you have a sexual attraction to kids, you make your decision as to whether that transfers into action. And if that transfers into action, you pay the price. That price includes exposure, right? Now we all know who you are now. That also can mean a prison sentence or a suspended sentence. But you're going on the sex offender register and now you're a sex offender and now you're managed by the different agencies. And the different agencies are the probation service, the guards, the prison service. They're all monitoring you now. And they're monitoring you for the rest of your life. And you can't live near the school. And you can't take a job that involves kids. And you can't, there's 100 things you can't do. And you have to declare, you have to let them know when you're moving house. And if you're leaving the country, you have to let them know. And all that is transferred. So if you're going on your holidays to Spain, the Spanish are being told you're coming.
Yeah.
Right? So there is significant punishment involved in that. Is jail the right place for them? And I'm going to ask you this straight up now, yeah. Right? One of the things that you're getting done is you're getting told who you are and you're getting exposed for being someone who has a sexual interest in children and has moved that on to an action. Because if its attraction is there, that's fine. But the manifestation of that involved, the manifestation of that attraction, if you're downloading pictures, you are manifesting that.
Mm.
And it is the job of the guards to put you before the courts. And what the courts decide in their wisdom after that, I absolutely take that the same as I would if I'm bringing a young lad in for dealing heroin and I put him before the courts, and if the courts decide to give him a suspended sentence, fine. That's the court's job.
Mick, let me just say, I believe there needs to be a mandatory sentence and it has to be a heavy... You hear people nowadays saying, you're caught with a knife 5 years. If you have child abuse or child images, CSAM, on any hard drive, it should be a minimum 7, 10, whatever years it should be. That's what I believe. There should be no suspended sentences for any of them under no circumstances.
And we'll send them up to Arbor Hill and they'll go into Arbor Hill for having possession of pictures, and they'll go into Arbor Hill and they'll be shared in a cell with a fella who raped 50 kids.
But why even have the images? Do you know what I mean?
But this is the thing about attraction and action. This is the thing. If you're manifesting the attraction, then you have to be pulled up on it. Okay? Now, how the court deals with that person who is manifesting their attraction to children is they will give them a suspended sentence. If they give them a suspended sentence, they are giving them also treatment for that. So their attraction is the problem. And the treatment around that attraction is that they understand the harm they'll do if they go to action, right? And the fact that you're catching them at all is very good. What about, and so I'll talk to you about the Dulkenfeld, right? So in Germany, they have this thing called the Dulkenfeld, right? Now, that's a very interesting program that they have. And they have ads on bus stops about the Dulkenfeld. And the Dulkenfeld in German means the dark field. How many people would you say in the world have a sexual attraction to children?
How many people?
Yeah.
10%.
Do you know that? Or are you guessing that?
Let's just say 10% of the world's population want to have sex with children. How many people is that? 10% of the world?
700 million. No, 800 million.
Okay, 800 million people in the world want to have sex with children. How many of them will move from attraction to action?
2%.
And of that 2%?
That we know of.
Exactly.
Because, yeah.
Exactly.
It's about proving it.
So look at all these people out in the dark field. All these people that we know.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing about them? So remember Rumsfeld a few years ago, he said, the problem is not what we know, the problem is what we don't know. Now, known unknowns, right? So it's a known unknown. We don't know how many are out there, but we know they're out there. What are you doing about them? And herein lies the problem, because being a paedophile is such a taboo that if you're having these thoughts in your head, there's nowhere for you to go. And so I would be a big fan of giving these people off ramps so that you can stop them from becoming action.
Sorry, what did you say the dark field was in Germany?
It's a program for people who want to volunteer to say, I'm attracted to children sexually. So they can go in and they can do therapy before they move to action.
Yeah.
And they can deal with these feelings. Yeah. And they can deal with this attraction. And they can get harm reduction training, if you like, so that they never move from attraction to action. And if you don't give them this off ramp,
then you're leaving it to manifest itself. It's basically a cancer. You're leaving it to grow.
Do you remember I talked about the four preconditions?
Yeah,
they're over 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They're over 1 and 2. And if they're over 1 and 2, then the next one is 3.
I completely hear what you're saying. It's not like as if I'm completely dismissing it.
The problem with sexual abuse is that it happens. That's the problem with it.
Mm.
Mm.
So what you have to do is you have to prevent it from happening. How do you prevent it from happening?
Yeah.
You educate the kids themselves, fine. But now you're at level 4. Before you're at level 4 there. You're at the 4th precondition by educating the child. You can't, there's an old Chinese proverb, prepare your child for the road. Don't try and prepare the road for your child.
Mm.
So you can educate the child to say no. that this is not right. And over-sexualization in our society is bad right now, right? These kids are being exposed to stuff online that, as a child, I never even imagined. Like, you can see stuff online, gore, porn, radicalization, all that stuff that you, your generation have seen online. So the child thing is just one way of protecting them. It's one way of preventing sexual abuse, is to teach the child. But another way is to go after the people in the dark field and give them an off-ramp and allow them to seek the help that they need to manage that attraction.
Mick, is the risk factor not too high here? Were they being children? Like, it's hard for me to comprehend what you're saying and then just be like, yes, this sounds like a good idea, because I also read a while ago that paedophiles, let's say, act when stress levels are high for them and certain things are going wrong for them in their life. So let's say somebody comes in, they have a bad day, there's a child at risk. That child, you spoke earlier on about children that are sexually abused, they go on to be addicts or commit suicide, and these things happen in their life. It's just as bad as fucking murder. You see somebody go out and murder someone or a mass murder, they'll never see daylight again. But we're taking this risk with children. It's guaranteed to ruin their life.
But if you are an offender, someone who has an attraction to children, it rarely manifests itself like that. Very rarely. The stranger danger thing that we were taught as kids, you don't talk to strangers and all that. That's like, if all the abuse is taking place in the family home or in the immediate family circle, the sports coach, the teacher, the guard, like, that's the reality of it. And it rarely manifests itself in a violent child being kidnapped and raped in the bushes. That doesn't happen. It happens through a whole process, a grooming process, where the attraction is there and it moves through to the access to the child and it moves through into abuse. Like, sex offenders themselves and the treatment of them, and you're dead right, there are triggers to them as well. But that trigger doesn't trigger an attack in the sense of, say, a domestic violence incident that escalates into murder. Doesn't escalate like that. This is a planned, the abuse is through a grooming process and everything else. And so situational offenders sometimes will violently rape. But the vast majority of child sexual abuse is taking place in a slow, controlled grooming process that then culminates in the sexual abuse. Once the sexual abuse norm is established, then the abuse can happen the same as anyway.
But this program that they have in Germany, surely they have statistics then. They can go and say, last year, 1,000 men came forward, and wherever, you can track those 1,000 men, how many of them have actually gone on to offend or have been caught offending, wherever. Yes. Surely they have a number and they can see the success rate.
Yes, they do see the success rates, and I don't have them off the top of my head.
But yeah.
Let's say they go and act on it. They're not going to go in and say, I'm not acting on it. They know the consequences.
But if you're caught,
it's only getting caught again. Going back in.
Well, you don't get caught again because you've never done it.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is, let's say they come out and we're like, yes, they're rehabilitated. You don't know that until you either catch them or they admit to it. Mick, you've worked in the field for years and years.
What I'm asking,
catching them is hard.
What I'm asking is, let's say 1,000 men come in.
Yeah.
And then of those 1,000, did you catch any of them? Surely they'd have to have a number.
Of the ones that they actually caught then after, if they did that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, they'd have to have, like, you can fucking quantify this. Do you know what I mean?
In the States, they've done a study in the Butner. They call it the Butner study. And the Butner study was of people who downloaded CSAM. And they asked them in a group, have you ever actually abused a child? And the figures came out over 50% of them had. That's the key that we're talking about here. Now, I think it was over a quarter of them, first of all. But then what they done was, they done another Butner study and they said, have you ever abused a child? And I think about 1% of them said yes, right? And then they said, okay, we have a lie detector machine here. Will you take a lie detector test? And then a large proportion admitted, okay, I won't take a lie detector test, but yes, I did abuse a child. And that got up over 50%. So there's the connection between CSAM and actual abuse. But when I'm talking about the Dulkenfeld project, I'm talking about giving them the off-ramp before they even go near child porn. They're not going near CSAM even.
Mm.
Their manifestation of their attraction to the children is dealt with in psychotherapy before they ever get near even CSAM. And yes, you talked about stress factors and everything else. That's something that in therapy you can identify, that you end up downloading this stuff when you're stressed or when you're on an alcohol buzz or you're on a hash buzz or whatever it is you're on, and you go and download this stuff. And if you can get into therapy and you can identify those triggers, what are the circumstances that lead you into downloading? And by downloading, then you're re-victimizing these kids. And if you can identify those triggers, then you can avoid those triggers.
Yeah.
And that's prevention. That's pure prevention. And sexual abuse is something where prevention is hard.
Mm. Yeah. Look, I'm sure we could sit and debate about it all night, but that's not what you come into doing, Mick. Like, come here, you're trying to put your best to put them away.
Yeah.
You're also looking for prevention.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, right, look, ultimately, I am not speaking up for them, right? I'm not speaking
up for them. No, I know that, and that's what I'm trying to make clear there.
And I would lock every single one of them away if I could.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is that it can't be all Garda before the courts issues. And then when you get them in front of the court, you can't be just locking them up. You have to give them treatment, you have to give them access to treatment and everything else.
That's why suspended
sentences are good.
Do you feel like we are a bit lenient on them, though? Because I feel like we're so lenient on them. I feel like you see people getting heavy, heavy sentences for being caught with drugs, addicts for going out and doing something while on drugs, and let's say murders, manslaughters, everything else in between. Do you feel like we're lenient on them?
No, I don't. I don't. For all the reasons I just said. Once you're managing them properly, once they've been properly managed, then that's the way society has to deal with them.
Yeah.
Right? Now, is it frustrating that you see these fellas? Yes, I say it's frustrating simply because I don't think we should be sentencing them on because he had 20 images or 15 images. I think they should be getting sentenced on how involved in the system they are and how engaged they are. That's what I would say. And you see behind these guys who are manifesting with this image, these images, is actual child sexual abuse.
Yeah, I have a case here. So just what Terry's saying, of course, I completely agree with what he's saying. There's a flaw then in the courts because the precedent is set there.
Yes.
If someone was caught with images, for example, I need to do it. Terrence is up before the court tomorrow, he's caught with images. They can only sentence him based off what the last fella who was up before him has done in the same situation.
Correct.
So that's where the problem lies. Now the precedent is set. You can't go back and be like, oh, what's the sentencing for someone caught with these images? 5 years, there you go. You don't. You say, oh, well, fucking John was up here last week. He got caught with the same amount of images as Terrence.
I love that you've researched that.
Because it feeds into what you are saying. So there was somebody who was caught with those 16 images. Yeah. He worked in a creche.
Yeah. Now, see him? He's working in a creche. Now, you have to ask yourself, what type of guy is he?
So that feeds into what you are saying. But then the argument was he showed up to court to be sentenced and expected to go to prison that day.
Yeah.
A solicitor was able to pull up a case recently and said
that precedents are set. And precedents are set.
And he walked out of court that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would argue that a guy who works in a creche is an absolute bigger risk than the guy who's wanking off to these images in his bedroom. Right? Do you see why? Because he has chosen to work in a creche. He didn't accidentally end up working in a creche. He chose to work in a creche. Why did he choose to work in a creche? Even though he had this sexual attraction to kids, he's a dangerous motherfucker, that fella. He is absolutely 100 times more dangerous than fucking texting Paddy who's pulling his wire to pictures in his bedroom. And that's what the courts have to look at, is what access did he have to kids? And did he choose to work in a creche? He absolutely chose to work in a creche. To me, he's a dangerous mofo. You have another guy there, a vigilante group, Gorham in England, an Irish guy, right? Now, there's a guy who's manifesting in the most dangerous way. So he's been chatting to what he thinks is a 14-year-old, puts a couple of Johnnies and a dildo in his bag, and travels to the UK to meet the girl outside a bowling alley in Manchester. Look at that for manifestation. Or the guy who travels to Thailand and pays 50 quid for access to these kids. Or the thing we're seeing a lot of now is remote sexual abuse. So a guy will go onto a website, he'll pay the mama-san 30 quid, and then he'll direct the abuse of the child there on the screen in front of him. Those guys absolutely need to be hammered. Absolutely need to be put before the courts, and they need to be hammered because they are choosing to do what they're doing. Now, the guy who's downloading a few images and jerking off to them is not in the same league as these guys. And that's where the mistake is being made. Now, the guy who is jerking off to the few images, to my mind, This guy is being dealt with properly by the courts. You can't fill your prisons with these idiots. They're the low-hanging fruit. You need to fill your prisons with the prick who's gone to Manchester with his condoms in his bag, thinking he's meeting a 14-year-old. He's the one that needs to be in prison. The guy who downloads 100,000 images is this guy. You can't fill your prisons with them. I told you already, you lift that rock, there's 100 of them runs out from under it. What are you going to do, put them all in prison? You can't put them all in prison. However, when you get the guy who is way up the food chain, like we have a kind of a pyramid of offenders. Like you've the simple viewer, the guy who's going on, this idiot here, he's the simple viewer, right? Then you've the next one level up is the open trader, the guy who's on peer-to-peer and he's openly trading, not hiding himself in any way. He's just another version of this fool. But then the next level up is the closed trader. Now you're starting to get into it. You've encryption on your hard drives. You're hanging out only in groups. You're using VPNs to hide your IP address. That's a different animal to this fella again. That's who you want to start putting in prison. But if you're spending all your days, if there's only 5 guards in the whole country and they're spending all their days down in the bottom 2, who's catching the next 2 levels? The next level up again is the expert, the guy who's running a dark net forum where all this exchange is taking place. Would he not be the guy you'd lock up?
Well, that's what I think you're speaking. I'm clearly listening to somebody who has so much experience in going after the people at the top, where you have the average person like me who wants them all locked up.
Yes.
And I completely understand that.
I understand the abhorrence and the average Joe.
Go for the big fish there.
You have to, but the courts also should be looking at it, guys. That's what I'm talking about, their involvement. Where are they on that pyramid of fucking shame? Where are they and what are the courts doing about them? And if they're down here on that simple willy puller in his bedroom versus a guy who's running a darknet forum and getting paid in Bitcoin for access to this stuff, who would you rather lock up? Yeah, who do you think deserves locking up?
Of course, yeah. And I think as well, from the conversation / debate there, we need to make clear you are the person catching these people. You're not picking up for them. I think it's damage limitations sometimes when you're talking about the low-hanging
fruit. Yeah, and the low-hanging fruit thing is unfortunate because if you only have 5 guards in the whole of Ireland who are doing this, or 10 guards, or 20 guards, they can spend their whole lives on the low-hanging fruit. You can go in every day and do a search. Every single day. So what do you stop doing so that you can put another 10 guards doing that job? And that's why, like, we absolutely should be working undercover online. We absolutely should be engaging these people online. We absolutely shouldn't be allowing vigilantes to do what they're doing. That should be guard at work.
That's what I wanted to ask you about the vigilante groups. Yeah. What do you make of that?
I just think that that's bananas in a lot of ways. And, like, what's their motivation? What's their motivation in doing this? And then you have to look at the damage that they are doing to a case. So you could have 100 of these cases, and how many of them will go to court? Maybe 1, maybe 2. Do you know what I mean? And maybe only the most serious ones. It's absolutely work that should be getting done in a police environment. It should be properly trained people doing this work. Now, I have said it publicly, and I'll say it again. I think there should be a Garda reserve of people who are brought in, trained as reserves, and working on that, doing that type of work. Just identifying Irish people who are out there offending online against children.
I think a lot of those groups, though, that they're looking at themselves as an additional resource. So if I can bring someone to you and say, here's face, we caught him, he thought he was meeting a 12-year-old, here's the messages, there you go. So the Garda doesn't have to go and do that.
And
instead,
you see, I'm conflicted on this.
Okay.
Right. I would say I'm conflicted on it because absolutely true what you say. They are an additional resource, in inverted commas, but they're not trained in it. They're not trained legally. They're not trained. And what about the human rights of that person who has been chatting with the 12-year-old? What about their human rights as well? That's like, you have to think about this. All criminals have human rights, and so do sex offenders. And so vigilante groups, I would say, people who have a genuine desire to do this, I understand it, but I'm conflicted because of that aspect of it.
Yeah.
That they're not trained, they've no respect necessarily for the human rights of this person. There's no legality around it. They're not working in any legal framework. And that's why I think you could have a Garda reserve of people who want to do that. You bring them in, You train them as reserve guards, first of all. You don't expect them to go out on the beat. You bring them in into an environment where they are in a controlled environment and they're doing this chatting and all, and you train them properly so that they don't go too far and they don't incite and they don't cause the case to fall on the fact that they are inciting,
yeah,
or whatever, you know. So I think that that's innovative thinking. It's possible, but is the desire there to do it? I'm not sure.
In Germany, if you're sentenced to 2 or more years in prison for sex abuse, you have the right to treatment. And the rehabilitation rate is 14% for people who have been treated.
And people that are caught, though, yeah, again.
Yeah, so you're in prison for 2 or more years for sex abuse.
But then it's 14% of the people who have
been caught, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the people who have been treated. The people who don't get treated, the rate is 26%.
Yeah.
They'll go on to reoffend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So 26% are getting caught again, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
And 14% are getting caught again. Yeah. So there's a clear...
There's a clear benefit to therapy. And if you're a sex offender and you have an attraction to children and you get treatment, you have a better chance of not reoffending.
Yeah. Mm. And again, that's 14% of people who are caught again and 26% of people who are caught again. That's not, you can never mark that as 100%, but still, no. Yeah.
Oh, well, listen.
It's clearly lower and...
Yeah, but don't forget that child sexual abuse is often a needs-driven activity.
What do you mean by that, Mick?
What I mean is, you're doing it because you need to do it. You're not doing it because you're choosing to do it. You're doing it because you need to do it.
In inverted commas,
yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Right? That it's a physiological need. It just becomes a kind of a... It's your only way of getting off is to abuse kids. If that's a needs-driven activity, then there's a very high chance you'll re-offend, no matter whether you get therapy or you don't. But if those figures are true, then the ones who are getting therapy have a lesser chance of being needs driven in the future, because they've been taught about, especially around harm reduction, they're taught about the harm that they're doing, and then they make a conscious decision not to do that harm.
See, this needs driven thing, is that based on what the offender has said that it was? Like, they said, I needed to do that, or is that based on, like, because there's a language.
Scientific thing to learn, yeah.
See, there's a scientific thing around sex and sexuality and all that, and it's a kind of a very principled pillar of who we are as human beings. Sex is, it's a drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, we all have it in us. Some psychologists will argue that it's a very deep thing. Sex drive is a very deep thing within the human psyche, and they would argue that my sex, what I like, and what gets me off is kids. They'll argue that.
Mm.
Now, whether you believe that or not is entirely up to yourself. But it is certainly true for certain preferential paedophiles. They just can't. Like, I have known, I've gone into houses where guys have been married for 15 years to a woman of their own age and they've never had sex. Never. Because they can't. They won't. They're just not attracted to this person. But they'll go into the bedroom and they'll download tons of CSAM, and they'll get off on that.
Fucking hell.
Mick.
Yeah.
We've been here a long time. I just want to get through one more thing. Do you think social media companies can be doing more?
Yes.
Because I see Instagram have ads now. It's all over the radio. Teenage Instagram. It's all automatically private.
Why didn't they do that 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Right? And that's a huge, huge, huge bone of contention. The thing about CSAM, right, and protecting kids online, the thing about that is it's all been put down onto the parents. And that is because of the economic model of these companies. They have to make money. And in order to make money, they have to have users. And in order to have users, they have to grab them. So they grab your eyeballs, and they've designed so that you'll keep going back again and again and again. They've algorithms and all working on that. And recently we saw with, say, Roblox, which is a company who got very badly criticized last year for the creation of a hellscape for kids.
Yeah.
Roblox is aimed at prepubescent children. And basically all the games on there, and not all the games, some of the games on there were like, where you could go in and rape a woman, you could go and shoot a guy, you could go, all those games are being played by preteen kids. Now, you could say they're just games. You could say that. But as a parent, Roblox put in place this, and this to stop that, right? But they'll never, ever do enough, because their argument is, it's the parents' problem. But here's the thing, they're the ones controlling the system. And for sea salmon and everything else. And I remember reading a book back in 2001 written by a forensic psychologist down in Cork, the Cowpine Project down there. Ethel Quayle was her name. And I remember reading that book back in 2001. And she had the problem of sea salmon will never be solved except by those companies. They're the only ones who can. And that's the reality of it. So now you're into the broader thing. So that's CSAM. CSAM should be easy. It's absolutely a disgrace that we can scan our computers. Like when you pick up your phone there and you turn it on, like Google or Apple or any of them there are scanning for malware and viruses and everything else all the time in the background. You have no problem with that. But the day you try and ask them to scan for CSAM, they'll tell you, no, we can't do that. That's a freedom of expression thing. Can't do that. That's a lie that you can't do that. Of course you can do it if you wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
It reminds me, remember we had this conversation about the racist abuse that footballers were getting?
Yeah.
And they were just like, what can we do? We'll try. There's simple stuff and coding mechanisms you can put in there that stops that straight away.
Yeah.
I remember there was a picture going around years ago and people used to joke with it, and it was a fella and a kid sitting on the beach. But it's only when you clicked into it, there was like Spanish writing or something on it. And it said something along the lines of like CSAM. But obviously, unless you clicked into the picture, you wouldn't know. And plus, it was in Spanish, then you wouldn't know. But if you sent that to somebody, I think it was Facebook at the time, can trigger what it said. It said something sexually explicit about the child. And it was getting flagged. So like people were sending their own groups, catching people with a messing. So I was like, that's a high-level thing that they've done. They can root it out.
Absolutely.
And they can definitely identify patterns and identify users and be like,
absolutely,
why is this man whose birthday is 1985 texting someone who's 30 years younger than him?
Yeah. And you see, they could be doing all that. And they will argue that they do some of that. And yes, they do. But now we've seen a whole, in the last 12 months or so, we've seen all the trust and safety teams are getting let go from these companies. Because they're saying, sorry, it's encrypted. We can't see it. Not our problem. You see? So, and it gets on. And like the European Union tried to bring it in, but it ran foul of privacy. You see? So they're arguing. The argument is, like, I can never get my head around why they can scan for viruses, but they can't scan for CSAM. I can't get my head around that. I can't get my head around the fact that Instagram are only bringing in these child accounts now. Now, but the parents do have a role to play, right? Because all of these products have all got settings on them.
Mm.
But of course, they don't make the settings easy. And the child accounts, for example, where privacy is by default, that's designing safety in from the start. So you have to switch that off. That should be absolutely the way everything should be.
Sure,
designing safety in from the start.
On your phone, I guarantee you type in any random person that you know to your phone and your phone will give you pictures of them.
Yeah.
They're able to identify that person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So your phone can identify that.
Look, one of the biggest vectors we're seeing at the moment for, like, sex offenders use the internet for three reasons. One, they use it for justification. So they justify, they birds of a feather flocking together, right? They talk to each other in the back channels. They share tips and tricks and everything else. The second reason they use it is access to kids and access to intelligence about kids and how kids are thinking and how kids are doing and to watch for vulnerabilities. And the third reason they're using it is for CSAM. Now, those people are there and they're on these platforms. And what are those platforms doing about it? And the answer is, in most cases, nothing. And you can set up a chat company in the morning and nobody can say boo to you. You can just put it out there. And what happens all the time, if you have a platform online, it is going to be abused by these people. And one of the bigger vectors we're seeing now, right now, we're seeing huge abuse of especially teenage boys. We're seeing a lot of sexual extortion to teenage boys, and that's on gaming consoles. We're seeing a huge increase in sexual extortion of kids, by other kids in a lot of cases. And that's all through the gaming platforms. And that those consoles that you get, your PS4, your whatever's now, PS5 now?
Yeah.
I don't know, right? PS5, your Xbox, right? If you go into them Xboxes, you go into the settings on that, properly into the settings on that, you can limit the games that are played. So you can't play over 18 games on the console. You can't chat to people that aren't in your contact list. You can't add people to your contact list unless they're known to you in the real. All that settings are all in there. Why are they not all turned on when you buy the box?
Yeah.
Who's using the box? It's all young fellas using the box. Young people using the box. Why is that not all turned on from day one?
You should have to turn them off.
Correct. Mm.
Like, correct. Start with that.
Correct.
And walk back.
But they're all about rushing to market. They're all about ease of use. They're all, you know, so if you have to go through and setting all this up, and then as parents, you should absolutely not be giving your kid a gaming console that isn't turned on. Because even if the company says they're all off by default or they're all on by default, they give Johnny, little Johnny, his Xbox at Christmas, he's going to just go and turn them all off.
Mm.
The parents shouldn't be giving them the Xbox until they've password protected all the on.
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah.
And then as each hurdle comes up on the screen, do you want, the answer is no or yes. But parents are a bit reckless. And in some ways, it's understandable, do you know? Because it's also complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And final one, Mick. You talked earlier about, we were asking how hard it is and how taxing it must be for you to do this job. But you said it's the most rewarding thing when you get the information that the person's been caught or the child has been saved, whatever.
Or in Hotline now, where we get sites taken down. We get the site taken down. That's a win.
Mm.
Do you know?
What's the most memorable case personally to you when you've had one of those wins?
Jesus, great question. Like we would go through, so we had this particular case that was like, it was in a kind of a studio where the abuse was taking place. And it was only exploitation stuff. And we were in a position to send images to Belarus because we found that that's where the stuff was being made. And they had a proper studio in, turned out to be in the basement of like flats, do you know, in like in with the bins type thing. But they had set up like this in there, and that's where they were carrying out the abuse. And we sent that to Belarus, and the Belarusians, we were able to identify your man, and the Belarusians did a live takedown of your man, and it was all like live streamed, and they were taking him down. And in one of the series that was produced, the girl is wearing a particular pair of knickers. And when we were watching this live stream go down of the hit, and your mom was like, oh, no. And when I say a hit, in Belarus, they hit hard. And so it was a real SWAT job. So that was all very satisfying. But then the cop turned around and picked up the knickers that the girl had been wearing and held them up to the camera. Do you know? And I was like, that's it. Bang to rights. There's no way he's getting out of this now. Do you know, when the clothes that the child is wearing are found in his apartment. Like, it was a sweet, sweet moment. And like, there was a lot of girls. And he had like, he was selling that stuff, you know, and he was making a lot of money out of it. And he was selling it. So taking him out meant that the 6, 8, 10, 12 girls that whose lives he was ruining, like these were all 8-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old girls. And he was ruining their lives. And then I think subsequently it was found that he had something in the region of 50 or 60 victims of, like, he was abusing 50 or 60 girls in his own little town. So getting them help, taking him out, sweet.
Beautiful.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Mickey's out there on God's walk. And yeah. I know we started off with asking you how busy you are, and
yeah,
it's contradictory. Like, the busier you are, the worse things are. So,
yeah. But just look, if you, the other thing you talked there about a picture that you got with the Spanish thing and everything else, don't share that. Report it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, and we'll deal with it. Ooh. Do you know? Or if you fall in foul of a boyfriend or a girlfriend that is sharing your intimate images, talk to us. Get that out there. We'll know who you can talk to and to get help. You know, but for God's sake. You know, the worst thing you can do with CSAM is delete it. That's actually the worst thing you can do, because you could actually be deleting the one chance that child has. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So if you come across it anywhere, on a website or anywhere else, just report it. Then you've done your bit. Whereas if you go, don't want to look at that, right, next, scroll, next. And then what you have actually done is that child could be identified, or maybe they're not. And if you've just scrolled on, or you've deleted it after finding it, that might be the only chance that they ever have in their lives of being rescued.
It's powerful, that, yeah. Mick, thanks for coming into us.
Not at all.
It's been very pleasure. Educational.
And before we wrap up, a big shout out to our sponsor, FBT.
When we started this podcast, I think we thought it would only be people from the inner city who'd listen.
I know, and now we have listeners all over the place, even as far as Talla.
Sorry to hear.
So this is a message to everyone in Talla.
FBT Gym have opened up their new state-of-the-art location now, offering not only top-of-the-line equipment, but also resources, classes and events that will help you build connection among members and an overall support of the fitness community.
And if you're lucky enough not to live in Talla, why not join one of their other locations in Swords, Coolock or Drogheda?
Do these locations have the classes and support of community as well?
Of course, that's what FBT Gyms are all about. They also offer personal training, heated chamber classes and a Hyrox affiliated.
Unleash your potential at FBT Gym for only €44 a month with no contract, full class access and locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and now Talla.
Sign up at fbtgyms.ie today. Take us out on.
Boom.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down.